Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks, which I founded to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. I do this through cooking classes, an online cookbook, recipes on the website, lectures and workshops, articles and essays, this podcast, and a cooking DVD. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting our website, CompassionateCooks.com. First of all, thanks to all of you who have responded to my request for support. As I've said before, this podcast takes many hours to produce, and I want to keep doing it, but in order to do so, I really do need your help. So if you find anything valuable and helpful in any of the topics I've covered, please visit CompassionateCooks.com and click on the button at the bottom of the page that says Support Podcasts. I know I sound like National Public Radio, but it really is true what they say. If you value what you hear, please support this work. I don't have a free tote bag, though, for you yet, but give me time. Every bit helps, so thank you in advance. This podcast is sponsored by a really fantastic organization called Nonviolence United, which you can visit at nonviolenceunited.org. And I love the work they do. They work to unite all of the social justice movements, human rights, environmental justice, animal rights, under one flag. And that flag that we all share is nonviolence. Through what they call proactive nonviolence, they teach people that their everyday choices can build a better life for themselves and a better world for everyone. So as you may have guessed, I really love their focus and their commitment. So thank you very much to Nonviolence United for sponsoring today's podcast. I've been getting so many emails from you that I am now officially behind in responding, but do feel free to email me at podcast@CompassionateCooks.com if you'd just like to say hi, or if you have a topic suggestion. I've been getting many topic suggestions, and I really better find some sponsors because my list of topics is so long that I will be doing this podcast till about 2050 at the rate I'm going now. So, and thank you for your comments on iTunes. I've become very spoiled because your comments have been quite glowing, and I really appreciate it. And then I've gotten really spoiled because there are all these 5 stars. Out of 5 stars, and then a few people gave me 4, and I was like, oh, okay, 4 stars, it's okay. What did I do something wrong? Can I do something better? So you've spoiled me, but, you know, it's okay. 4 stars is great. I really appreciate both. I'm teasing, but just don't give me 3, please, for God's sake. Don't give me 3 stars. Anyway, today, let's talk turkey. I want to talk about turkeys. I want to talk about how fabulous they are, and I want to talk about what we're doing to them. But first, before that, let me tell you some stories about turkeys I've met over the years. Some of what I'm about to say is based on my November article in Satya magazine. That's satyamag.com, for whom I'm a contributing writer, so it may sound a little familiar to some of you. I have been visiting a local farmed animal sanctuary for many years, and I've brought many people up to the farm to meet all the critters. And after several tours, it became clear to me that the animals with whom people had the most transformative experience were the turkeys. It's almost always the same. We meet the cattle, and people are absolutely in awe of their size and a little intimidated. They're huge. But once they realize how gentle they are, they really come around pretty quickly. As far as the pigs, people are always shocked by their size. If you've never seen a full-grown domestic pig, it's really upsetting and unsettling. What most people don't understand is that domestic pigs have been so genetically altered, so far from their wild brothers and sisters who are much smaller than they are, for the sole purpose of growing as large as possible, as quickly as possible. So they're huge by the time they're adults, and people don't understand. It's not that they're being fed hormones once they're born. This is not what makes them grow so large. It's that they've been bred so large so that they're at slaughter weight by 6 months. And so that intention was that they would be killed at 6 months and never really live beyond that age. So when you see a 2-year-old or 3-year-old or 10-year-old pig, it's really disconcerting because they're freaks, and they really are. They're not supposed to be this large, and they have many problems with their hips and their legs and their back. So it's really unsettling, but they're amazing, and people love communicating with them and rubbing their bellies. They're very responsive, and they have all these wonderful grunts and groans, which can also be a little scary if you're not familiar with their sounds. So they always have that kind of same experience. They're just kind of in awe, a little intimidated, a little nervous, but always happy to rub a belly or two. Of course, everyone just goes crazy around the bunnies because they're so damn cute. I mean, they're like painfully cute, and we just admire them from afar because we don't go inside their little hutch because they get stressed too easily. But everyone admires them from outside, and they're just like too cute. And then the hens, it's the same thing. We kind of watch from outside their little coop, and they're so pretty, and they're quiet, and they're perching, and they're preening themselves, and they're really awesome, and everyone has the same response to them. And then there's always a few cocky roosters strutting about, demanding much deserved admiration for their colorful and gorgeous luminous feathers. They are really pretty, but they don't exactly sit down next to you for a belly rub. So we go on to the sheep, and the sheep tend to be a little skittish. They tend to keep their distance. Some of them are friendly, and they really love to be petted, but for the most part, they take off en masse up the hillside. The burros are really special. The donkeys, they are very hard to leave when it's time to move on. They're so gentle, and I personally believe they have secrets they're not sharing with us. They seem very contemplative and have the softest lips you'll ever kiss, and you have to kiss a donkey before you die. The goats, I could spend all day with the goats. They remind me of my cats. They've got spunk, and they've got attitude, and they love affection, and they remind me of cats in the sense that, you know, well, my cats aren't like this. My cats are kind of like dogs. They just come right up, and they're very social, but in the sense that goats just kind of sidle up right next to you. They don't want you to know that they really want to be rubbed and scratched, but they'll just kind of come right up and like lean against your body until you touch them, and then they're happy. And then if you move away, they'll follow you and do the same thing. So they're pretty special. And everyone kind of has that same reaction. They're really amused by the goats because they're so funny and so spunky. But it's with the turkeys that people tend to have the most long-lasting, profound transformations. And it's pretty amazing to witness. If you've never met them, turkeys are magnificent animals, full of spunk and spark and affection, kind of like goats, it sounds like, with individual personalities, obviously. And I'm amazed by every rescued animal I've ever met, including the turkeys who've been abused and discarded by human beings, turkeys whose beaks and toes have been mutilated, literally their toes, the ends of their toes are cut off, and the ends of their beaks are cut off, just like with hens in battery cages. And these turkeys have these genetically overgrown bodies that are susceptible to heart disease and leg deformities. And despite all of this, they still display immense affection for their human visitors. I think these animals have a lot to teach us about forgiveness and resilience. Turkeys are very curious. They want to investigate every shiny, sparkly item you may be wearing, and they follow you wherever you go. They have the most wonderful vocalizations that I've been wanting to record for years, this array of clucks and purrs and coos and cackles. It's their physical bodies that tend to give people pause as well. These animals are living symbols of our annual gluttony and our Frankenstein-like scientific endeavors. The first thing people notice is how white they are and how awkwardly they walk. Modern domesticated turkeys are bred to grow unnaturally large, unnaturally fast, in order to be at slaughter weight at anywhere from 12 to 26 weeks young. But their skeletons, as you can imagine, and their organs can't support the weight of their breasts. And their breasts are huge. They're just huge. And most people don't know that in order to meet the consumer demand for white meat, they're bred to produce white feathers. So pretty though they are, the whiter their feathers, the whiter their flesh. And that's the only reason they lack the colorful plumage of their wild ancestors. Still, they do share some physical remnants of their wild ancestry, which intrigue and delight first-time visitors. Hanging over a turkey's beak is a flap of skin you may have seen. It's called a snood, S-N-O-O-D, and a similar textured flap of skin under the turkey's chin is called the wattle, both of which are a beautiful blue color that turns bright red during courtship or when the turkey's upset. So it's a good way for us, and for other turkeys, of course, to assess another's mood. Males, and sometimes females, also have what's called a beard, a bristly mass of the prickly feathers, almost like wire on their breasts, which is an indication of age. The larger the beard, the older the turkey is. The comment I've heard most often from people who meet the turkeys is how much the turkeys are like their own dogs and cats. Turkeys are very affectionate. They love to be caressed, and they even make a purring sound when they're content. But not until you've had a hen fall asleep under your arm have you lived. This is when I see hearts and minds just completely transformed. The trick is knowing exactly where the secret spot is, which you have to reach for kind of under her belly. So if you've ever seen a compromising photo of me with a turkey, with my arm reaching under her body, it's just because I'm looking for her spot, all right? So I'm not doing any kind of exam on her or anything like that. She just has a special spot, and it's under her belly. And once you find it, you know right away, because she literally melts under your touch. She just relaxes her body, and she begins to close her eyes, and she purrs, and she kind of clucks really softly. And it's really amazing. It's absolutely amazing to experience and to watch other people experience, too, because they just never expected a turkey to act like this. Some individuals are more affectionate than others. I mean, not every single one of them is like this, but some of them are even more affectionate. They climb into your lap or they hug you. And there's a quite infamous photo of me with a turkey named Lydia who just loved hugging people. As soon as you crouch down, you would just kind of squat down and she would run over to you and press her body against yours, literally just push her body against yours and crane her head over your shoulders. And she would just be clucking all the while. It was just amazing. It's just amazing how so generous a hug can be given by someone with no arms. She was just amazing. So they're not all saints, but some are heroes. One turkey, he was so sweet. He became my personal protector. I was trying to clean a barn and was continually accosted by a particularly rude and aggressive turkey who shall remain nameless. And each time this aggressive turkey would kind of close in on me, my little hero would waddle over and get between me and this other turkey. And it happened again and again and again. Turkeys are obviously very persistent. So every time he would try to close in on me and, you know, kind of aggressively approach me, the other one would kind of squeeze his way in. And what made it even more touching was the fact that these toms suffered from bumblefoot, which is an occurrence of abscesses on the foot pads that resemble corns. And it's a common occurrence in domestic turkeys. So between their grotesquely large breasts and their inflamed feet, turkeys walk very awkwardly and with a lot of effort. So the fact that this would happen over and over again on my behalf was very touching, and I appreciated it very much. I believe that one of the reasons we're able to endorse the brutal killing of certain animals is that we don't live with them. We don't have relationships with them. We don't have this kind of interaction with animals. Of course, when we hear of other countries eating dogs and cats, we're just absolutely appalled, which I find a little hypocritical, because to the animals, it's all the same, right? So to the turkeys who feel just as much as my cats do, you know, I don't want this done to them. So I, you know, our disconnection with farmed animals enables us to distance our emotions and our thoughts and our empathy for them. And anyone who did grow up on an animal farm witnessing or participating in the killing of animals will tell you that they had to dull their emotions and desensitize themselves to the violence in order to keep doing it. And that does not a whole person make. That's not ideal. That's not optimum. That's not where we want to be. Nobody did it without having to separate themselves somewhat. And especially these are people who would also go home to their dogs and cats. Now, I grew up eating turkeys' breasts and turkeys' legs and turkeys' wings, and I'm still making amends to these extraordinary animals. But once I met a turkey, I was never the same again. And the kinds of things we do to them is worse than anything we could conjure up in our worst nightmares. There have been many investigations of slaughterhouses, and every time I think I've heard the worst, I turn out to be wrong. There's something more hideous just around the corner, and I really hate this moment because I feel like some of you will stop listening at this point where I talk about our treatment of them, and I feel the need to urge you to keep listening. The truth is not pleasant. It's not. It's horrific. But if we're paying people to do things to animals that we would never do ourselves or can't even listen to or, God forbid, look at, then we really need to stop and think about how we want to spend our money. And if we've already gone there, if we've already been there and looked, I still encourage you to listen so you can bear witness and speak on their behalf. the fact that we're not supposed to talk about the cruelty towards animals says a lot about our discomfort with it. And more importantly, I believe our silence perpetuates it. Our indifference bloodies our hands, because if we're not doing something to stop it, then we're allowing it to continue and paying for it to happen. The notion that an animal-conscious life, or nonviolent life, a vegan life, whatever you want to call it, is limiting and restrictive is very ironic to me, because I think it's just the opposite. When we open ourselves up to the sadness, to the suffering, we're opening ourselves up to our own compassion, our own ability to feel, to sit with the pain, and to feel moved to act. But to close our ears and turn off the sound to what's true, however painful it is a very limiting and restrictive way to live. That's just my two cents. I could be wrong. Now, one of the things I think we forget is that the slaughter industry is just that. It's an industry that exists for only one purpose, to kill animals that have been bred to be killed. That's the only reason these animals are born. Billions of animals born just to be killed. That's their only purpose, to get fat and be killed, eviscerated, decapitated, mutilated, and skinned. That's it. The slaughter industry is ugly. It's dirty, it's chaotic, and it's bloody. Day in and day out, people who have become completely desensitized to the fact that these live animals don't want to die and are literally fighting for their lives kill. That's what they do. That's their job. Whereas your company might have salespeople and programmers, cashiers, assistants, these untrained workers in slaughterhouses have such names as knockers, stunners, stickers, shacklers, tail rippers, bleeders, gutters, and sawers. I think it's pretty easy to figure out what each role entails. But as violent and bloody as each job is, there is so much peripheral violence, violence that occurs outside of the actual violence involved in slitting an animal's throat and having her bleed to death. Outside of that, there is so much horrific activity that takes place. And it's because violence breeds violence. There are no two ways about it. And the stress and chaos that is the modern slaughterhouse breeds brutality. Untrained workers exploited themselves, who care only about meeting their quota so they can make another day's pay, take their stress out on the animals and hurt them on purpose. And let's face it, some do it just for fun. Investigation after investigation reveals horrific abuses against animals. In terms of turkeys specifically, a recent PETA investigation took place at a Butterball-operated slaughterhouse, and here are just a few of the things that the investigators witnessed. Workers using birds as punching bags while the birds hung upside down in shackles. Workers kicking turkeys who attempted to run away. I mean, this happened just repeatedly, just punching turkeys and kicking turkeys who had already been shackled. Workers placing both the leg and the head of a turkey in shackles and then pretending to hump her. A worker who was made angry because a turkey defecated on his head, took the turkey, who was already shackled by her feet, and forced her head into the shackles too. Birds whose legs were so swollen that they could barely fit into the shackles were forcibly shackled anyway. Workers swung turkeys like bats against metal bars and walls. An incident where a turkey was swung like a bat against a handrail on a set of stairs, and when her bloody spine was exposed, she too was just shackled up by her feet. And it's important to note that in many of these cases, the slaughterhouse workers would just laugh and carry on and kind of make fun of the fact that there were no repercussions for their actions. One of the worst abuses was committed by a worker who pulled a turkey from a coop and held her upside down so that her head was on the concrete floor and then stomped on her head, which exploded under the weight of his foot. And he wiped the blood from his leg and joked, "I gotta get rid of the evidence," and he admitted to doing this often. Probably the incident that has stuck in my head more than any other was one that involved workers who climbed on top of a transport truck and grabbed the head of a turkey that was protruding from the coop. They twisted the turkey's neck, one punched her neck and the other pulled her head in an effort to decapitate her. If you're still with me, I'm almost done. And this is happening right now as I speak, so as uncomfortable as it makes all of us, it's nothing compared to what these animals are going through right at this moment. At this moment. At this moment. Workers often throw carcasses, either victims of their own abuse or those who died as a result of heat exhaustion, at live birds as they hang in the shackles. Workers play catch with live turkeys, tossing them 20 feet in the air, many of whom land on the concrete floor. Workers often strangle turkeys to death, just because they can, just because they crossed their path, or strangled turkeys who were just hanging upside down in the shackles. And finally, and what I've described here doesn't even scratch the surface of the abuses that take place. There's plenty more. In one particular incident, the investigator noticed that a turkey had been thrown in the shackles, but had been mutilated. She was missing a leg. And when he turned to the coop where the worker was unloading, another worker was unloading birds, he saw the animal's severed leg stuck under a bar. So she had just been pulled from the coop, despite the fact that her leg was stuck, and he pulled anyway, and her leg came off. You can read more, you can watch the undercover video at butterballcruelty.com. And if you're still listening, you might be asking yourself, why do they do this, as I've asked myself before, and the only answer I have is, I believe, because they can. It's called unchecked power. They have the ability and they can. But the whys and wherefores of human cruelty is an entirely different subject that we can talk about another time. For now, the first thing we need to do is, I think, take a deep breath and take heart in the fact that we all have choices. We can choose to sponsor these abuses or we can choose not to. It's up to each of us. And if not you, then who? And if not now, then when? As I go about my days, it's hard not to think about the animals every second, about their pain and their fear, the terror they're experiencing. And it's really hard sometimes. Living with animals is a constant reminder of who I do this for and why. And visiting animals at a farmed animal sanctuary reminds me of who I do this for and why. And I think it's really important to make these connections with these amazing, amazing creatures with whom we share this earth. And I dedicate all of my work to them. Everything I do for them and for you. And I dedicate my work to all of you as well, who are open to knowing and open to witnessing and to acting on their behalf. If you'd like some foolproof recipes for celebrating turkey-free, and of course, free of all animals, dinners and holidays, you can find a bunch of recipes at CompassionateCooks.com. Also, check out PeacefulPrairie.org. It's the website of Peaceful Prairie Sanctuary, a farmed animal sanctuary in Colorado. You can meet some turkeys on the website, and you can sponsor their work, their peaceful work, committed to nonviolence and healing. And may you find the same in your life, at your table, and in your heart. This is Colleen from Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.